Yeah, this is Arthur Jackson, consultant in infectious diseases, here with Frank O'Riordan, antimicrobial pharmacist in the Mercy Hospital, and we're going to talk today about quinolones. Just a quick disclaimer to start with. This is a podcast made with madewithopinion.com, and the podcast represents our own opinions, doesn't necessarily represent the formal views or opinions of the employers or institutions. Be aware that medicine is constantly changing and one practitioner may have a different way of doing things from another, and we welcome any comments, suggestions or corrections of errors. So today we're talking about quinolones, and they're also known as fluoroquinolones. They were introduced in the 1960s, and they're pretty much a fully synthetic byproduct of quinine production. They actually inhibit DNA gyrase intracellularly. The antibiotics we use today can be quite broad spectrum. They're used frequently, but they've become less and less so used in the first-line guidelines because of possible toxicities, especially C. diff consideration. They're currently second-line for hospital-acquired pneumonias, and they're also used in pen allergy patients. They can often be used covering intra-abdominal infections. They can be used to cover resistant respiratory infections, for example, Pseudomonas, if it is shown to be susceptible. So I'd like to thank Frank for coming on the podcast today, and I'd like to ask him just to introduce a little bit again, which exact antibiotics are we talking about in this hospital setting?
The main quinolones that we'd see in the hospital setting would be ciprofloxacin and moxifloxacin and levofloxacin and ofloxacin and norfloxacin. They're mainly broad-spectrum antibiotics with a bactericidal effect, and they work by preventing the bacterial DNA from unwinding and duplicating.
So Frank, can you tell us a little bit about the different spectra of the different individual quinolones that we use in the hospital?
Probably the most common quinolone that we'd see in use in the hospital is ciprofloxacin. It's mainly used for its activity against gram-negative bacteria such as Salmonella, Shigella, Campylobacter, Neisseria, Pseudomonas and E. coli. It does provide some gram-positive cover, but only moderate cover for Enterococcus faecium, and should not be used for pneumococcal pneumonia. Most anaerobic organisms are not susceptible. Levofloxacin provides broad-spectrum gram-positive and negative cover and does provide better pneumococcal cover than Cipro. It should, however, be considered second-line agent. Moxifloxacin has increased activity against anaerobes and pneumococci, but it doesn't have any Pseudomonas or MRSA cover.
And Frank, so can you just reiterate again, what are the individual quinolones used for in our hospital?
Ciprofloxacin is used for respiratory tract infections, urinary tract infections, gastrointestinal infections, or bone and joint infections. They're also used for community-acquired pneumonia, and in the case of moxifloxacin, it's also used for complicated skin and soft tissue infections where first-line therapy hasn't responded. The main use for agents like norfloxacin is in prophylaxis of spontaneous bacterial peritonitis.
Can you just tell us a little bit about the side effects that are important to know about?
The most common side effects, which you would see with many antibacterial agents, are diarrhea, nausea and vomiting, headaches and abdominal pain. The probably the more important ones to consider are the risk of C. diff, and there are a number of CSM warnings with the quinolones as well, which are important to consider. The first being that there's a possible chance of induction of convulsions in patients with and without a history of convulsions, and the taking of non-steroidal anti-inflammatories concurrently may also induce the risk of convulsions. The second important side effect to note is in relation to tendon damage, which has even been reported within 48 hours of commencing therapy, but also up to several months later. This means that quinolones are contraindicated in patients with a history of tendon disorders related to quinolone use. Elderly patients over 60 years old are more prone to this side effect, and also patients with an increased risk when there's a co-prescription of corticosteroids. Should tendonitis occur or be suspected, it's important to discontinue the quinolones immediately. The third important side effect is in relation to QT prolongation and partial toxicity, mainly due to moxifloxacin, but also associated with levofloxacin and ciprofloxacin. These agents should be avoided in patients with a history of arrhythmias, patients suffering from acute MI, congenital QT prolongation syndrome, electrolyte disturbance, patients with heart failure with a reduced left ventricular ejection fraction. And now I've got a couple of questions for you, Arthur. As a clinician, what's your biggest pet hate related to the use of quinolones?
One thing that I think is very important is people using intravenous ciprofloxacin when oral ciprofloxacin can be just as good. There's extremely good bioavailability of all of the quinolones, and if you can use it orally, you should use it orally because of the inherent cost and risk associated with using intravenous antibiotics. The other thing that I think is important is people using quinolones when the spectrum of the quinolone is far too broad for the cultured organism, and that puts the patient at much higher risk of Clostridium difficile. Is there anything else you'd like to bring up specifically about quinolones?
The main things I'd probably worry about are in relation to the QT prolongation, which we've already discussed, especially with other medications that can prolong the QT interval. They also provide good tissue penetration and good urinary concentration. They have long half-lives, which allows for once or twice daily dosing. Other issues just to consider, there is a risk of phototoxicity associated with them. They can exacerbate myasthenia gravis, which is important to consider in patients with that condition. And it's important to point out to patients that when they do take it with milk or calcium or magnesium containing products, there is binding of the divalent cations, which prevents absorption. Quinolones chelate with cations such as aluminium, magnesium, calcium, iron and zinc.
Thanks a lot, Frank. Where else can people get more information if they're looking for more information about quinolones?
The best sources of information are probably the BNF, the nchd.ie website, and also the hpra.ie website, which contains the SPC of each of the individual quinolones. Can you give me an esoteric fact or a higher level piece of information regarding the quinolones?
People that might be studying for exams should probably know a little bit about the different Pseudomonas activity of the different individual quinolones. Ciprofloxacin and levofloxacin have very good anti-pseudomonal activity, but it's important to realise that moxifloxacin has very little anti-pseudomonal activity and should not be relied upon for this. Another thing that's important to realise is that moxifloxacin is becoming more and more important in the area of TB treatment and some other mycobacterial treatment. So it is important to be aware of this. If you're using moxifloxacin in a patient for whom the differential diagnosis includes tuberculosis, because you may get a clinical improvement from the anti-tuberculous effect, but you may be developing resistance to moxifloxacin if you're using it as the only anti-tuberculous agent in someone who actually does have tuberculosis. Regarding the tendinopathy associated with quinolones, the majority of cases it occurs in the Achilles tendon, and in the vast majority of cases it is unilateral, although there are atypical presentations. And one last factoid of sorts relates to antibiotic resistance. Bacterial resistance to the fluoroquinolones is usually chromosomally mediated, and the resistance can lead to alteration of the target sites. That would be DNA gyrase or topoisomerase 4. The resistance can be from alteration in the cell wall permeability due to a loss of outer membrane proteins and mutations that regulate active antibiotic efflux out of the cell. They'd be the main mechanisms of bacterial resistance. So that's a quick overview of some of the issues relating to quinolones that doctors should be aware of. I hope it's been of some help.
Thanks to Frank for joining us today.